Still, the situation in Nairobi was tough, and getting tougher. Clothes were mostly secondhand, a doctor's visit reserved for the direst emergency. Almost all the family's younger members were unemployed, including the two or three who had managed, against stiff competition, to graduate from one of Kenya's universities. If Jane or Zaituni ever fell ill, if their companies ever closed or laid them off, there was no government safety net. There was only family, next of kin, people burdened by similar hardship. Now I was family, I reminded myself. Now I had responsibilities. But what did that mean exactly? Back in the States, I'd been able to translate such feelings into politics, organizing, a certain self-denial. In Kenya, these strategies seemed hopelessly abstract, even self-indulgent. A commitment to black empowerment couldn't help find Bernard a job. A faith in participatory democracy couldn't buy Jane a new set of sheets. For the first time in my life, I found myself thinking deeply about money, my own lack of it, the pursuit of it, the crude but undeniable peace it could buy. A part of me wished I could live up to the image that my new relatives imagined for me. A corporate lawyer, an American businessman, my hand poised on the spigot, ready to rain down like manna the largesse of the Western world. But of course I wasn't either of those things. Even in the States, wealth involved trade-offs for those who weren't born to it, the same sort of trade-offs that I could see Alma now making as she tried, in her own way, to fulfill the family's expectations. She was working two jobs that summer, teaching German classes to Kenyan businessmen, along with her job at the university. With the money she saved, she wanted not only to fix up Granny's house in Alego, but also to buy a bit of land around Nairobi, something that would appreciate in value, a base from which to build. She had plans, schedules, budgets, and deadlines. All the things she'd learned were required to negotiate a modern world. The problem was that her schedules also meant begging off from family affairs. Her budgets meant saying no to the constant requests for money that came her way. And when this happened, when she insisted on going home before Jane served dinner because things had started 2 hours late, or when she refused to let 8 people pile into her VW because it was designed for 4 and they would tear up the seats, the looks of unspoken hurt, barely distinguishable from resentment, would flash across the room. Her restlessness, her independence, her constant willingness to project into the future, all of this struck the family as unnatural somehow. Unnatural and un-African. It was the same dilemma posed to me the year I left Hawaii. The same tensions that certain children on the South Side might suffer if they took too much pleasure in doing their schoolwork. The same perverse survivor's guilt that I could expect to experience if I ever did try to make money and had to pass the throngs of young black men on the corner as I made my way to a downtown office. Without power for the group, a group larger even than an extended family, our success always threatened to leave others behind. And perhaps it was that fact that left me so unsettled, the fact that even here, in Africa, the same maddening patterns still held sway, that no one here could tell me what my blood ties demanded, or how those demands could be reconciled with some larger idea of human association. It was as if we, Alma, Roy, Bernard, and I, were all making it up as we went along, as if the map that might have once measured the direction and force of our love, the code that would unlock our blessings, had been lost long ago, buried with the ancestors beneath a silent earth.